Hello, everybody. It is that time again, and that time is Our Podcast Could Be Your Life. My name is Jeff.
I'm Caroline.
Yes, and today we are joined by yet another special guest. Would you like to introduce yourself, sir?
Hi, my name is Brent, probably better known as Trout Mask on the Rate Music forums.
Yes.
Named after Jeff's favorite album, of course.
Well, it's funny you bring up Captain Beefheart, as they have something to do with the band we're talking about today, I think.
A little bit, yeah.
And that band is Royal Trucks, Scum Rockers Extraordinaire. Just real scumbag music, I think.
You don't get scummier than this. I don't think even the Butthole Surfers ever got this scummy.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you could make an argument that maybe Pussy Galore was a bit more like the whole trash aesthetic thing, but I mean, Royal Trucks are better.
They didn't live it. They didn't live it like this.
No.
That's true. Yeah, I would agree that Royal Trucks are better than Pussy Galore, if not quite as scummy, because definitely lyrically, Pussy Galore really embraced that scumbag aesthetic also.
But it felt like a put on.
Oh yeah,
it was. Yeah,
I'm not a big John Spencer fan.
I like him better in the Blues Explosion than I ever did in Pussy Galore. But it's still like it's all artifice. It just plays better when he's basically trying to be Mick Jagger.
Sure, sure.
Yeah, I do like Dial M for Motherfucker, but I haven't listened to it in years. So
yeah, I remember liking that more than their other ones, but mostly like, when you get down to it, it was just the stuff that Neil Haggerty was bringing to them that really appealed to me.
Yeah.
Maybe, because, you know, I'm not big on the Blues Explosion either. I guess I like a few of their songs, but every time I try to get into them, it's a little bit like, all right, dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, but Pussy Galore did give us Royal Trucks, or at least it was an important precursor to Royal Trucks. And Neil Haggerty says that John Spencer was and is a big influence on him. So they weren't good for nothing, basically.
No, like I don't hate them. I just find them their work. Where Royal Trucks, like, I can put on an album and just listen to it. Whereas with Pussy Galore, it's like, oh, I have to get through another song.
Right. Pussy Galore is fun, though, just because, you know, I kind of like sleazy music, so
they've got that in space.
Definitely. But we're talking about Royal Trucks, though, who you came to me, Brent, and said you wanted to talk about Royal Trucks. So what do you like about Royal Trucks?
Well, mostly it's just that they somehow managed, like, I'm going to make a weird comparison here, but I kind of think of them the same way I think of Bjork. Whereas they don't really make the same album twice, but they always make albums that you could not mistake for being by anybody else. Everything that they've done is like, it sounds like Royal Trucks, but no two albums really sound alike. I just thought that would make for a more interesting conversation than a lot of my other favorite bands that might overlap with you guys.
Yeah.
Or just, you know, just talking about, you know, the greatness of, I don't know, like U.S. Mabel or something.
They are pretty great.
Yeah, U.S. Mabel.
Yeah, but they're great. They're great in a very similar way every single time. Whereas with Royal Trucks, like, when we get into it, we'll be talking about like basically six or seven different bands.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, and getting back to the Captain Beefheart thing, you know, it's kind of funny actually that I do like Royal Trucks so much, and I do. Because I feel like their two biggest influences are bands that I'm not that fond of, that being Captain Beefheart and the Rolling Stones. But
there's a little bit of like early Velvet Underground in there too, especially on their first album, I find.
But. Yeah, I would say so, but especially on like their work after Twin Infinitives, I think it's very Stones influenced.
Oh yeah.
Big time. Jeff, I have a question.
Okay.
Have you ever seen Gimme Shelter?
I have not, no.
I think that Gimme Shelter made me a Rolling Stones fan.
Really?
Because,
yeah. You saw that guy die?
No, no. But they do have concert footage from other concerts that went well. Mm-hmm. And, yeah, that made me really appreciate the Rolling Stones.
Just seeing them play live?
Yeah, seeing them play live in their prime.
Mm. Yeah, honestly,
you also get to see Tina Turner. And she's awesome. So
true. I also think that with Rolling Stones, if you just kind of ignore everything after Exile on Main Street, they become a much better band in hindsight.
Yes.
Well, even like their peak era material, I've never really connected with it. It's just too like basic or something. I don't know.
You should watch Gimme Shelter, though.
I plan to. I've seen some other Maisel's Brothers stuff, so.
Yeah, like Grey Gardens.
I actually haven't seen Grey Gardens.
What the fuck?
I have seen Salesman, though, which is a good movie.
I've been wanting to see that forever.
You should.
But, yeah, Grey Gardens is great. Gimme Shelter is great, so.
Okay. But I guess, for me, Royal Trucks improves on those two artists. Just because Captain Beefheart, I find annoying. Like, well, I remember when we were talking about Captain Beefheart, Caroline, you asked me, like, why don't you like Captain Beefheart when I know you love Twin Infinitives? And, like, for me, Twin Infinitives is... It takes everything that's cool about Captain Beefheart, but jettisons all the stupidity of it. Like, it's not, you know, singing about stupid shit and, like, in a really annoying, gruff, like, shouty voice.
Well, I think that, like, the main difference I hear between, like, early Royal Trucks and Captain Beefheart is that Captain Beefheart was more data and absurd, whereas Royal Trucks have more of a sci-fi bent to at least Neil Haggerty's lyrics. Like,
yeah.
One interview that I found with them, there's this massive archive of interviews from this old fan site, but it's really shittily formatted. I'd link it to
you.
Yeah, I saw that, too.
Yeah, but he was talking about how he was really into Philip K. Dick while they were recording that album and wanted to get in touch with Valis while
book.
I have yet to
read. I'm really excited.
I am ridiculously under... under influenced by Philip Dick. I've read like A Scanner Darkly and that's it. But
you really should read Valis. It's really good. There's a character based on Brian Eno.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
I could get behind that. Couple of books that I have not read that I'm trying to get through before I add more to it. But,
yeah. I've read about 15 of his books. I'm a pretty big Philip K. Dick fan.
Damn, Caroline.
They're really short. They're easy to get through.
Ah, okay, I'm pretty underread on like sci-fi in general. Actually, I'd like to read more, but
yeah.
I got all these 33 1/3 I got to get through though.
Yeah, those are short too. You should throw in a couple of Philip K. Dick books in there.
Yeah, I suppose I could.
Can't read nothing but 33 1/3. Just
is there a 33 1/3 on Twin Infinitives?
No.
Not that I know of, but that would probably be one hell of an interesting read.
Yeah. If they could get like real in depth with the recording process and everything, like I would be interested. Right. Yeah. Who knows if they could even remember all that. Royal Trucks' reputation for being druggies is kind of legendary. They insisted that they didn't write or record on drugs, but
see, I've heard variations on that. Like specifically for Twin Infinitives, they recorded like the bass, like the guitar and drums and things sober. And then when they were adding the synths and the weird field recordings and all that shit to it at the end, they were on every drug that they could find. That, like, I mean, it could be bullshit because they liked fucking with the press when they'd ask them questions back in the early days.
That's
So I don't
true.
know how much of that to believe, but it makes sense when you
Sure.
listen to the album.
I mean, it definitely sounds like drug influenced, particularly, heroin, which they were famous users of. Supposedly at one point they signed to Matador Records, I think around the Cats and Dogs era, and they
Yes.
spent all their advance on heroin.
And they
Yeah,
got dropped.
that got them booted from Matador Records.
As it should have. But I remember reading, like, I think it was on the tour for the second self-titled that they were doing the tour by train and consumed all their drugs way too early in the tour and just completely fucked everything up after that.
Oh yeah, you got a ration, man.
Yeah, exactly.
I guess we can go ahead and start talking about these albums. You actually wanted to talk about the debut, which
Yeah.
personally I kind of think is skippable, but
See, the thing is that the last time that I went through their discography before, like well before we were doing this, I didn't really like that album at first. And then I listened to it and Twin Infinitives kind of back to back, and it kind of listening to the first self-titled really enhanced my appreciation of Twin Infinitives, and Twin Infinitives enhanced my appreciation for the debut. And I can get why you wouldn't like the first one, because if anything, that's the one that I compare to Trout Mask Replica more than 20.
Well, it has more like actual songs.
Yeah, but they don't quite know how to be songs. Like they're on the verge of falling apart all
Yeah.
the time. And like I find that fascinating to listen to personally.
Yeah, it has some really good stuff on it. The opening track, Bad Blood, you may know better for the Taylor Swift cover. Notable
Yeah.
Taylor Swift fan, a notable Royal Trucks fan, Taylor Swift.
Yeah, that was a real curveball in 1989. I mean, I was not
Yeah.
expecting that at all.
Shout out to Taylor Swift.
Well, she's been hanging out with Saint Vincent, so she got really into like Big Black and
That's true.
cannot wait for the album influenced by Big Black and Butthole Surfers, honestly. That's gonna
Oh, that would be great.
God, I wish that would happen. Like, I wish. You know what? I wish I was taller and like thinner and prettier, and then I could like be calmness, and I would just do that.
Yeah, do you like Taylor Swift? Either of you?
Not
I
really.
like her. I like her with reservations. I'm not like, I mean, I enjoy her older, more country leaning stuff because basically I live in a hick town, and every hearing a lot of country music, she was definitely better than everything else I was listening to from that genre or being forced to listen to. I enjoy a lot of the songs from her more recent stuff, but I don't go out of my way to listen to them.
I had a roommate that was obsessed with Taylor Swift, and so when 1989 came out, I had to listen to it every single morning. And that was rough. I think I would like it better if I didn't have to listen to it all the time.
Yeah.
But she's okay.
I don't understand people who hate her, but I don't understand people who like worship the ground she walks on either. So
Yeah, she's an enigma to me. Like, I don't get it.
What is her life like?
I don't get the obsession. I don't get the obsession with Kanye either. Like,
Yeah.
I like Kanye actually
Well,
as
but
a
Kanye goes out of
musician.
his way to, make people obsessed with him, so.
You think that's
I
what it
want to
is?
know how he got $53 million in debt.
Oh yeah.
You got to be careful with those credit cards, man. They'll get you.
For real. Well, he probably has $53 million,
Well,
doesn't
not anymore, apparently. Otherwise, he'd just pay that shit off.
Right. Well, have you listened to the new one yet, Brent?
No, but
No.
Neither of you?
can we get a consensus on this? He's definitely on coke, right?
Kanye?
Yeah.
Something. I don't know.
If he's on coke, I think he's been on coke for a long time.
He
Like,
definitely seems coked out to me.
yeah.
Yes.
I haven't really been paying attention to his antics recently because that's the thing that I don't care any at all about when it comes to him.
right.
So I'm not, but it would not surprise me given like just the little things that I've picked up by osmosis.
I miss when his Twitter was about how hard it was to find a rug with cherubic imagery. See, that was real. That was shit I can relate to. That's probably what put him in debt.
Yeah. All those cherub rugs.
Yeah.
Kanye West is for people who use Twitter.
That's what I say. I think that's true.
Mm-hmm. But anyway, getting back to the Royal Trucks debut.
Yeah.
Are there any songs in particular that you like really like on this album?
Well, personally, my favorite is Jesse James from, I think it's like tucked away in the second side of it.
Yeah.
And like, it's just this basic like kind of blues riff, and then this penny whistle solo just comes crashing in and goes across all the channels, and it's,
yeah, that's so awesome.
Yeah, the first time that happened, I was just like, I am in love with this song. And even when I wasn't so hot on the whole album, that was the one song I would just keep coming back to. And S.O. Dame's another good one, although with that one I find myself listening to the Peel Session version more than the album version.
Oh, are there Peel Sessions for Royal Trucks? I gotta check that out.
If you have singles live unreleased, they've got not the whole session on there, but they've got select tracks from the two that they did. And like, I think one was Cats and Dogs and one was Thank You Era.
Oh, I would love to hear that because to me, they're such a like studio band kind of, I guess. Like a lot of their stuff is affected by production, I think, like intentionally.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, as they change their sound, as they evolve, like they would drag up old material and update it to that sound. So like when they like the S.O. Dame Peel Session, it's much closer to sounding like Cats and Dogs than sounding like their first album.
Oh, okay. Oh,
that sounds really interesting.
Yeah,
they did a couple of older songs like that. I mean, when we get to talking about Twin Infinitives, I'll bring up the version of New York Avenue Bridge that actually introduced me to that song, which was from the Thank You tour.
So, how long have you been a Royal Trucks fan, Brent?
I think, like, I've been a fan probably since I first heard Twin Infinitives.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to remember how long ago that was.
But were you a fan, like, back when they were still active, or?
No, because, like, when they were active, I was still, like, a radio and much music for MTV for Canadians, I guess.
Right. Yeah.
I wasn't going out of my way to find, like, out of the obscure shit until I was like grade 11 or 12, and that was early 2000s.
Ah, okay. Because I know you're a little bit older than I am, but
yeah, I just turned 30, so I've got a couple years on.
So how's being 30?
That's about the same as being 29, except I have this weird urge to listen to Steely Dan every day.
That's not weird.
Yeah, I've got that already.
No, it's a joke that I make with some friends of mine.
Nah, there ain't nothing wrong with that, my friend.
No, there isn't. It's just. But no, like, so probably I want to say it was like 2004, 2005. Because I think, like, I'm trying to think, because I think it was actually one of the Howling Hex albums that someone recommended to me. And then it's like, you should go listen to their older stuff, this guy's older stuff, too. Now, I want to say it was the 2005 Howling Hex album, but I'm not 100% sure.
Okay. So, wow, you actually got into Royal Trucks from a post-Royal Trucks project.
Yeah, well, and, like, it kind of feeds into, because when I think Neil Michael Haggerty is one of the most underrated guitarists of the 90s, personally.
I would agree with that, actually.
Yeah.
I think that people just kind of ignore him because it's very much a classic rock style of guitar as opposed to, like, Isaac Brock or...
But it's such a fucked up take on it, though.
Like, yeah.
Yeah. It's very much a Paul Leary kind of take on...
Oh, yeah.
Classic rock.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, I can definitely hear that there's definitely Paul Leary in his playing, but, like, listening back through their stuff, and especially, like, the Cats and Dogs, Thank You, Sweet 16, all those, like, his guitar playing on those albums is just, it's some of my favorite work from the 90s, actually.
Mm. Well, is there anything else you wanted to say about the debut?
I want to shout out Hashish. Is that the instrumental?
That's one of them. There's a couple instrumentals on the first side. I'm trying to think.
Hashish is the good one.
Yeah.
Touch
is the one that has all those weird stops and starts built into it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I really liked that one. Also, Have either of you guys ever smoked hashish? What's that about?
Yeah.
Is it good?
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's
I
just
think
like...
I did it once, and it was just like a slightly different take on being stoned.
Yeah, it's just like concentrated weed, pretty much.
Okay. Oh, so is it like super bourgeois, like dabbing?
I think dabs are hash, actually. But
oh, okay. Mm-hmm. Why don't they just call it that? Why does everything have to be updated?
Well, I don't know how long dabs have been a thing. Because
not long.
So
what's that?
I've never actually heard it referred to as dabs, but well, I don't, you know, in those circles very much anymore. So
well, okay, dabs is like when you take like a spot of hash and you use like a blowtorch on this weird like attachment that you have for your bong, and then you
okay.
like stick the. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, except I've done a very lo-fi version of that with a butter knife and a lighter. So
yeah, this dude I know
it's bought
a
you're
fucking,
a working man,
right? This dude I know bought like a $300 attachment for his bong and a blowtorch so that he could like do hashish dabs like that. Like it's ridiculous. You have too much money.
Seriously, you don't.
Yeah,
need to
like I like smoking pot just fine, but I wouldn't spend that much money on it.
Yeah, it's absurd.
Not on equipment.
No.
But yeah, debut.
Yeah,
Royal
the other
Trucks.
Song I want to shout out there is Walking Machine.
Okay.
Which is the last the second to last track. Where it's Jennifer just saying that she's going to knock you out for 4 minutes while this weird like organ and sax thing goes on in the background. Like it wasn't one that immediately jumped out at me, but the last few times that I went through the album, it's just like it's an interesting sound.
Well, you guys are making me think maybe I need to come back to this one because I've listened to it a few times, but it's just never really struck me as like. As focused, I guess, as the later stuff, but
oh yeah, it's not focused at all. But it's a mess, and I fucking love it for that.
All right, well, should we talk about Twin Infinitives?
Yes.
Yes.
All right. This album rules.
Yeah.
I think it is my favorite Royal Trucks album, but like I have to advise that it is kind of an outlier in their discography.
Yeah, I was surprised at how much of an outlier was.
Yeah.
But,
Well, it was, like, the way that it was recorded, it seems like it was a very different way that they were going about it. Like, they had moved out to San Francisco and were just basically picking up studio time with untrained session musicians whenever they could, whenever they had the money to. So it wasn't like their later stuff where they had, like, a vision in mind. They were just doing this when they had the time and money. And were, you know, sober enough to not fuck everything up.
I mean, I'm surprised that this stuff was recorded in studios, actually. Like, it very much sounds like a bedroom project, kind of.
Well, the other thing is that it was recorded over, like, 14 months or something.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it doesn't sound like something that took 14 months to make.
No. How would you describe the sound of this album to people that have not heard it?
I would probably steal Simon Reynolds, either in his review or in a later review of a Royal Trucks album of his that I read, where he said it was Sun Ra made by people who'd never heard jazz.
Oh my god. I would describe it as, like, the experience of just... It's raining and you're walking under bridges and you have a head cold that will never go away.
Mm-hmm.
Like, just then aesthetically. I mean, sound-wise, I think it's kind of impossible to really describe, but...
I mean, it is fucked up.
This is a fucked up album.
Like, and it sounds druggy as shit to me, like...
This is probably the druggiest album I've ever heard.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Like, it's up there with, like, The Pod. I'd say it goes farther than The Pod, actually.
The Pod sounds, like, sick, though.
Yeah.
Like, The Pod sounds
kind of like mushrooms, whereas this sounds like what I'd imagine heroin's like, seeing as I've, you know, never done heroin.
I have also never done heroin, but yeah, it does sort of give me that like lying there, unable to move, feeling like fucked up and kind of sick and nauseous.
It makes me glad that I've never done heroin, because like, Sounds kind of fucked up.
Yeah.
It just kind of reminds me of when my sister had some friends over once and they were watching Trainspotting, and one of her friends is like, if I ever get hooked on heroin, make sure I never quit. Just
because of the baby scene.
The baby scene and all that. Is like, it doesn't seem like fun to get off of drugs.
No. It's the getting on that's the fun part.
Yeah. Well, I hear alcohol is the worst.
As far as getting off?
Yeah, like if you're an alcoholic.
It's worse than heroin?
Yeah, well, you can die from alcohol withdrawal, and I don't think you can. I mean, I'm sure you can, but I don't think that heroin withdrawal is as severe.
Well, I've heard from various people that it's harder to quit drinking or just smoking cigarettes than it is to quit heroin. So
yeah, I think because those things are more around.
Yeah.
Like you can avoid. Have something to do with
it. What? So yeah, that probably has something to do with it.
Right, like cigarettes less so now, but definitely drinking is still like so integrated in culture that it's like impossible to avoid.
And just like socializing, you know, like
yeah,
you know, you get together like, with your friends and you drink.
When I was in university, if I was in a group of people who were smoking, I would have a puff or two, but it wasn't like. Because it was just you were in this group of people, you might as well sort of thing.
Right.
I mean, I'm not a smoker, but it happens sometimes.
Sure. But yeah, especially drinking, because my friend is trying to quit now, actually. He's trying to go, like, cold turkey and not drink at all. And it's weird, because usually he drinks a lot. I don't know, that used to be kind of like what we would do together, but like now...
You should hang out with me, I never drink.
Yeah.
I'll keep him off.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Everybody just hang out with me, I'm just pure and innocent, never do anything bad.
Which, I mean, I'm not a huge drinker, so like I don't mind not drinking like when I hang out with him, but it is sort of like, you know, now I like can't drink at all when I'm around him, it's weird.
Yeah.
But it's still cool. It's all good. We're still friends. I love him. Just letting everyone know.
Good. Mm-hmm. So, you know the song Ice Cream?
Yeah.
On this album? We haven't talked about Jennifer Harima, really.
She's awesome.
She is.
So awesome.
She's Kim Gordon at her brattiest without making me want to punch her.
Yeah.
She does have that Kim Gordon kind of thing. The, like, grunty like, kind of...
Yeah, except when Kim Gordon does it, I can't deal with it for more than, like, a couple songs. Like, I've never actually been able to listen to a Free Kitten album because she's just doing that all the time.
Mm.
But...
Like, yeah. Like, I love Kim Gordon, but, like, again, like, when she's doing that real, like, rough kind of vocals, that's not what her actual voice is.
Yeah.
And that's not, like, the... type of environment that she actually comes from. She didn't earn that rasp, you know what I mean? And I love her, but Jennifer Harima has lived it, man. She earned it.
That's true.
And
it's just so much attitude that comes out of it too, and it's like I fully believe that she would be able to take me in a fight, and I'm not a small
oh yeah. And she's also interesting for kind of being in mainstream culture. She was Calvin Klein ads, which I actually saw one. She was in like a CK1 ad, which was like a perfume or something.
See, I think I saw that link somewhere and never actually watched it, but I just the idea of it was just like, that's the 90s, I guess.
Yeah. Yeah. That Jennifer Harima could be in a TV commercial.
Yeah.
What a time.
It was a good decade.
Sure.
Only true 90s kids will understand this podcast. So yeah, Twin Infinitives is a really fucked up album. Most of the songs do not resemble songs, really.
No.
Well, given, like, once again, this could all be bullshit because there's always that possibility with Royal Trucks, but, like, it was when they did all that recording... And then Neil Haggerty was just chopping up the things that they jammed on and looping them and reversing them and doing a whole bunch of things like that just to make the bass tracks for the album. Mm. And then they would add like the synths and stuff over top of whatever loops he'd come up with. At least that's the impression I got, and that makes the most sense given what I'm hearing when I listen to it.
So this is sort of edited from jams, kind of?
Yeah, like, there, when they would get together, there was like a 4-song set list that they would just do over and over and over again. I'm trying to find it, what the 4 songs were, but I think it was like Cool It Down by the Velvet Underground, Wheels by Graham Parsons, Radar Eyes by Gods, and some Louis Armstrong song. That they would just play over and over and over again, and then when they would take the like those jams and cut them down into song-sized chunks, basically.
Interesting.
That's really cool.
So yeah, I didn't know any of that, and that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
Because yeah, like these are not songs really. They're just kind of these like fucked up sound collages, sort of, like,
yeah.
they're like barely like something like Ice Cream, like it has a riff and
yeah.
like a rhythm, but like it's totally broken and like
sort well that's of, true most of the songs here except for like New York Avenue Bridge.
Yeah, I guess that's true.
And I fully believe that without New York Avenue Bridge I would not like this album anywhere near as much as I do, because it just kind of normal. It's like, this was all fucked up for an hour, and now here's something normal to recognize just how fucked up the thing you listened to was.
That's an interesting point, yeah.
I mean, well, New York Avenue Bridge is hardly normal.
Right. No. Well, like, but like I was saying, like, one, actually, I think the first version I heard of it was it was a B-side from one of the singles off Thank You, where they redid it as basically just boogie rock. Mm-hmm. It's called Hibiscus, if you can. I don't know if it's up on YouTube or anything, but... Like, I just heard that and was like, well, this is a weird song. And then I heard the original version. And it's like, oh, this is what it's supposed to sound like.
That's
but no, like, it kind of serves the same purpose with Twin Infinitives that something like Bring Me Coffee or Tea does on Tagomago.
Yeah, yeah.
That makes sense, yeah. For me, the highlight of this album, and kind of a Royal Trucks, is Edge of the Ape Oven.
Sure.
Oh, yeah.
It's just this incredible, like, fucked up, epic. And it's got, like, That's a harmonica in there.
Yeah. And then when that guitar riff just crashes in, like, after a few minutes of that, it's just, like, that's one of the best moments on the album, for sure.
Oh, yes. Yeah. That's the best moment on the album for me.
Epic is the word, yes. That is the correct word.
And it's funny because, have either of you heard Hand of Glory?
No, I haven't actually.
Nah.
It's not worth it. But the first, like, it was...
that was recorded around the same time, right?
Yeah, it was supposed to come between the first album and Twin Infinitives. Mm. But the first track is 20 minutes of that, like, harmonica and bongo loop that they had going for the first bit of Ape Oven. It's just that for 20 minutes.
I could probably get into that.
Yeah.
It's that might be worth hearing, but the second side of it is just bullshit. Like, It makes the first album seem structured. So, yeah, it's like, I personally don't think it's worth listening to more than once. But I mean, if you're a fan, you might want to just give it a listen to see what's going on between the two albums.
Highlights for me on here. I really love the opening track, Solid Gold Tooth, because that just plunges you right into the mania pretty much.
Yeah.
Just bow, bow, bow. Ah! Like, just right away, you are, like, dipped into this fucking crazy-ass album. And
yeah, they don't fuck around on this.
No, indeed.
Like, you know whether you're in or out very quickly.
There's no acclimation period. You're just thrown into the deep end.
Yeah, like, if you can't handle Solid Gold Tooth, like, you don't really need to go any further, I don't think. Yeah.
Actually, funnily enough, I think the first song I heard from this was Lick My Boots.
Oh, yeah?
Because, like, this is, you know, getting into the how fucking old I am of it all. But back when I was getting into this stuff, I was using Kazaa, which was a shitty, shitty peer-to-peer service.
I've used Kazaa.
Yeah. No, but, like, Lick My Boots was the only song off this album that I could find there. So I just downloaded it, listened to it completely without context, and just, like, I don't have the vocabulary for this yet. I'm going to come back to you in a long time.
Yeah, Kazaa was fun because you had to, like, you know, just hope that it had all the songs from the album that you wanted.
Like, and it never did.
No, it very rarely did. No. Well, I remember...
But it was better than LimeWire, where you had viruses. Yeah. Yeah.
But I remember trying to...
First generation Napster, too, which was...
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was, like, sixth grade when Napster was around. And yeah. I remember downloading songs on dial-up and it taking, like, half an hour to download the DMX song I was looking for.
Yeah, I was on a 14.4 modem at that point, so it was painful.
Those were the days.
Yeah.
I also really love Glitter Bust, which I just think is, like, fuzzed out and, like, sick sounding and just cool. I love Chances Are the Comets in Our Future.
I was just going to shout that one out.
Yeah, because we get some good, like...
That and Osiris, or other than Above, and are my two favorites on the album.
Mm-hmm. And that's a good song for Jennifer, because she gets this sort of cool chant over the backing track.
Yeah, it kind of feels like a dry run for the last track on Cats and Dogs, I guess.
Okay.
That's that same sort of, like, mantra, like, repetition of...
Yeah,
the,
yeah.
It's, like, disconnected ideas.
An interesting point.
Like, there's a through line there, but, like, you would not mistake Chances Are the Comets in Our Future for anything off Cats and Dogs.
No.
What else?
Yin Jim versus the Vomit Creature also. The whole side two is really great.
Yeah, side two is killing it.
Side two and side three are really great. Like, I like the way that they built the album, where, like, the sides A and D are more fractured, and, like, there's I think it's, like, there was four songs on sides B and C, and then side A and D have the rest of the 15. So you've got these, like, more fragmented stuff bookending this, like, massive slab of just primal garage rock.
Yeah, totally.
Filtered through whatever drugs they happened to be on at the time.
Yeah, and I've got this on vinyl, and it's, like,
remastered. Do you have the reissue, or did you...
Yeah, I got the reissue.
Yeah.
It sounds great, too.
Looking at, like, the first two Royal Trucks albums, just looking at Discogs Marketplace, they're charging, like, $50 for original pressings of those albums. It's like, fuck no.
Yeah, just get the reissue.
Yeah, I like those albums, but I don't like them that much. Jeez.
I don't like any album that much.
Well, the only album I've spent that much on was Jackie O Motherfucker's Magic Fire Music.
Oh, wow.
Actually, I have spent $50 on an album, and it was Fly by Yoko Ono.
Nice.
And that was a great purchase.
I've yet to hear that one. I'll have to add it to the never-ending list.
You'll like it if you like Royal Trucks.
Good to know.
You know, I actually heard that apparently Royal Trucks and Thinking Feller's Union had beef.
What?
Yeah. Like,
well, San Francisco had beef with Royal Trucks when they were there, and I think that that's where Thinking Feller's were located at that point. I might be wrong.
Yeah, they were.
But, like, they basically just came into town and started fucking shit up, and no one that was part of the San Francisco scene liked them. So it makes sense that Thinking Fellers might have some sort of particular beef with them.
They're also, like, teenagers on heroin.
Right.
That's not a good combination.
But when you look at it, like, Jennifer Harima was, like, 17 or 18 when they moved out to San Francisco, so it's not like they were mature by any stretch.
No.
And she already had that voice at, like, 18, man. Just that, like, raspy, guttural singing voice, you know?
I feel like I read somewhere that she'd been kicked out of her house when she was, like, 14, 15, and that's when she started hanging out with Pussy Galore and Neil and all that stuff. That may be a complete lie, and she can sue me for libel if it is, but...
I
remember reading something along those lines somewhere.
Was John Spencer into drugs?
I think he wasn't. I think that was part of why Neil Hagerty, like, they had a lot of tension, I think, because John Spencer wasn't. At least certainly not to the same level.
Right.
Like, he strikes me more as, like, he might have been a casual drug user, or at least, if anything, like, maybe a heavy drinker, but he doesn't strike me as the kind of person who would get really fucked up on heroin or whatever else they were being offered at that point.
Yeah. Anything else about Twin Infinitives?
No, it's a great album.
You just have to hear it to believe it.
Yeah, I think everyone should give it a try. It's definitely not for everyone, but
no.
It's really unlike any other album I've ever heard, probably. Yeah. Like, right. It is a singular piece of work, for sure.
I mean, like, I made the Sun Ra comparison, and there's maybe a couple of his more fucked up albums that I could compare it to, but no, it's still in a different world from that.
Well, what Sun Ra album would you compare it to? Because I'd be curious to hear it.
The second side of Atlantis, mostly. I mean, it's just like it's not quite the same because it's just like a solo piano piece, but it's still got the same sort of weird atmosphere.
That is interesting because I'm pretty into Sun Ra, so I've heard Atlantis like a bunch of times, and that is an interesting comparison that I probably would not make, but I can see it.
Yeah, well, I mean, like, it just kind of, I read it in, like, one of Simon Reynolds' reviews, like I said, and it just kind of fell into place. It's like, that's as close as I've come to hearing some, like, as much as, like, to, you know, bring up the elephant in the room here, as much as Garufi wants to compare them to every single fucking rock band from the 70s. That's the one time it's like, that's the one time that I just thought that's kind of dead on, or close enough to dead on that I can go with it.
Well, we are going to skip over the second self-titled Royal Trucks, or I guess it's untitled, but...
Yeah, depending on where you look.
Right. And we're going to go right to their fourth album, Cats and Dogs, which I believe this is the one that they were supposed to do for Matador, but...
I think so.
It was, yeah.
Yeah, but they ended up not... Now, this album... You can definitely hear the Stones influence on this one. It's a lot bluesier sounding. It sounds like a little closer to music that normal people might make. But definitely a fucked up take on blues rock, I think.
Yeah, I mean, listening to this, you see exactly why they were being courted by major labels. I mean, this is just a pop album. No, I'm kidding.
Yeah, Royal Trucks getting signed to a major label is one of the, I mean, I guess lots of, like, unlikely bands were getting signed to major labels.
There was, like, a whole, like, top 40.
Yeah, Boredom's Pop Tatari was released on a major label, so.
I always go to is, I'm not sure if you guys have heard of this one, but Brutal Juice's Mutilation Makes Identification Difficult.
Brutal Juice?
They are basically what the Butthole Surfers would like. It's kind of the same sort of sound as Independent Worm Saloon. Was that the one that Buttholes did when they signed? Yeah, it's kind
of
like
the one that was produced by John Paul Jones.
Yeah, it's that album except more with a lot more television DNA in it. It's fucked up, and I heartily recommend it. And it was released on a major label in 1995.
Brutal Juice, huh?
Yeah, I'll send you a recommendation for it. It's well worth hearing.
I would be interested in that. So Cats and Dogs, how about this one?
This one, I actually like some of their, I actually like their major label work better than this one. But, but Let's Get Lost is really good.
I really like Slang. The flag is that it's so simple, and yet I just keep coming back to it. It's like easily the best 2 minutes on the album right there.
Yeah. I guess my favorite would probably be Turn of the Century, which I just think has really great guitar work on it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah,
this is kind of the album, I think, where Neil Hegarty really reveals himself as a great guitarist.
For sure.
Because it is very based in that kind of bluesy, stonesy sort of sound, but there's such a quirkiness to it that, like, sets it apart from that also. Like, there's lots of wrong-sounding notes and, like, woozy-sounding notes, and
And just weird decisions, like in Teeth, where there it just starts off with that really kind of mellow groove, and then the guitar just comes with that da-da-da-da-da out of the mix. Just like that, it doesn't sound right, but it sounds perfect.
Yeah.
I feel like this may be the best. Maybe this is like the most representative Royal Trucks album. Like,
well, yeah, because it's not unlike their major label ones where they were trying to like evoke a certain decade each time. This one just feels like this is what the album that they wanted to make, sort of thing.
Yeah, and it manages a good balance, I think, of like noise and pop, I guess, also.
Yeah.
Whereas maybe they leaned a little too hard in the latter direction on their next album.
Well, and there's also an EP that came out around this time too. It's called Dogs of Love that has what I think is probably their best song from this era, Back to School.
Huh.
And like, if you guys haven't heard Singles Live Unreleased, you should really get on that. There's a lot of good shit on there.
Okay. I am intrigued. What other songs do you like on here?
I really like Driving That Car with the Eagle on the Hood.
Definitely, yeah. Definitely.
Yeah. Excellent. That to me is just kind of like lying on the grass, stoned, and just kind of looking at the sky and listening to someone rant over you and not caring what the fuck they're saying. It's just peaceful, I guess.
I love Friends for how noisy it is. Like, it's just this good sort of interlude-y kind of track.
Yeah,
I love Friends for that storyline where one of the friends got a monkey.
That was a good storyline on Friends. Aren't they making a Friends reunion? Isn't that happening?
I think so.
I believe I read that somewhere.
Yeah, I believe I read that somewhere.
I will be honest, I've never seen an entire episode of Friends.
I feel like we've talked about that on this podcast
before. I'm sure.
But that's weird, honestly.
But I've seen every single episode of Seinfeld at least 50 times.
Damn.
Yeah.
It's a lot of times. Well,
like, I've seen multiple episodes of Friends multiple times, but that was just because when I first moved in with my old roommates, that was, like, the show that he had all the seasons on DVD and was just watched them constantly, so I'd just be wandering through the house and it's like, oh, you're watching Friends again.
Friends is so basic, man.
Like, it's not something I would go out of my way to watch, but I'd never actually, like, run away when it's on, sort of thing.
No, it's not bad, but it's not really, like, good either.
Also, like, the way I've come to think of it is, it's Seinfeld if they didn't realize that they were watching, or if they didn't know that they were horrible people. Because if you think about, like, some of the shit that went on that show, like, the friends are terrible people. They're not as bad as the people on Seinfeld, but they're terrible people.
Well, you know, like, I realize I am not the first person to have made this observation, but how the fuck are they affording these apartments in goddamn Manhattan with the jobs they have? It's
yeah,
because
like on Seinfeld, like Jerry's apartment is realistic for that time period. For a
maybe
successful-
slightly bigger than it would have been, but that's just a function of needing the room for the set and whatnot.
Right. Have you guys ever seen that video that was an alphabetical listing of every single black actor that's ever been on Friends?
Oh, yeah.
Because it's like, that's probably the greatest
shortest video
Friends
ever
has ever spawned.
Yeah. Anyway.
Do we want to talk about Thank You?
Well, do we have anything else about Cats and Dogs to say?
Not really.
I think Cats and Dogs is really good, and
it's a good album, but it's the one that's there's the least to talk about just because it's so surprisingly competent, I guess.
I think it's a good starting point, actually. That one and another one we'll get to, but
I think you should just dive right in and just listen to fucking Twin Infinitives, because that's what I did.
Well, that is an unrepresentative album, though.
But that's kind of.
But
like,
I'm always right.
I think through Trout Mask Replica and Trout Mask Replica only.
Yeah, yeah.
You need some grounding first.
Sure, sure.
I didn't.
But yeah, so they got signed to a major label because, of course, and,
it was the 90s, baby.
Right. That's just what happened in those days is...
You know what's crazy about the 90s is all this shit happened, but fewer people were on cocaine.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It was a pretty meaningless decade, all told.
Yeah.
But... That was Pax Americana, though. That was when America was chill. Except for, like, Kosovo. But, yeah.
except for, like, that one thing.
Right.
Other than that.
Right. But anyway, yeah, thank you. They're first of... They signed a record deal for 3 albums, and the idea behind these albums was that each one was going to explore a decade. They were going to use equipment that was used in that decade and try and capture the feel and the spirit of that decade. So Thank You was supposed to be the 60s. Honestly, I don't know that any of the 3 albums really sound like the decade they're supposed to sound like.
They don't. I don't think they're supposed to sound particularly like the decades. I think they're supposed to evoke the decades. This one I don't think succeeds, but right. I think the next two... get closer, especially Accelerator.
Yeah, like this one, like I can kind of hear it if I listen to it a certain way, it's kind of there, but it's mostly just they wanted to make a Rolling Stones album, so they made a Rolling Stones album.
Fair enough. Yeah, this album is probably their most mainstream work, their most accessible work.
Yeah.
Not like a ton of noise on here, not like a lot of songs have, like, verses and choruses, and they can be followed like regular songs.
Yeah.
But I think it's a pretty good album, regardless of that.
I might like it slightly less than Cats and Dogs, but there's a couple of songs on there that are much better than anything on Cats and Dogs. Like, You're Gonna Lose is just an absolute fucking amazing single.
Okay.
Yeah.
And also, even though, like, I never heard it on the radio, but...
yeah.
Also, the opener, A Night to Remember.
Sure, yeah. A Night to Remember is good. It's got those boogie guitars that it starts out with, and kind of a...
What I never hear anyone talking about is Fear Strikes Out, but that's another one where it's just, like, that's the one where it's mostly, like, I can hear kind of where they're going for with the 60s angle, because it's got the same sort of, like, that sort of... Really, it's just Stones, but that's whole, like, 60s boogie rock sort of thing. And that's the one where it comes through clearest for me, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I would say this album kind of has an emotional tug that maybe the other ones don't. Like, Map of the City, I think, has that a really kind of strong hook, bit of a sing-along
kind of song. And I'd say that's probably Neil's best vocal performance.
Map of the City.
Yeah, like he's there's more passion in it than I thought he actually would be able to muster. It was a weird feeling at first.
Make me fall, man, I'm all you can eat. That's true. Passion is not really, or at least not like belting it. Passion.
No.
You can't do that if you're. Right. You can't do that if you're like nodding.
Right.
You're, like, yeah. Nodding off.
Well, I mean, at this one, I think they were sober, so it wasn't.
Okay.
Like, I seem to remember that after either just before or just after Cats and Dogs, they kicked at least heroin. I'm not sure if they kept up with anything else, but the heroin aspect was gone.
Well, this album does sound more energetic than some of their work. So
I think Rayovac is a great drunk sing-along.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. It's not my favorite on the album, but in that context, I can see it working.
Yeah. It's the one that sticks in my mind the most just because of that aspect. I'm like, on the Rayovac.
It is probably like the catchiest song on the album.
Yeah.
You know, it's got like the easiest hook to remember.
Yeah.
I really like Lights on the Levee, which I think has really sort of cool, little bit fucked up sounding guitar work, you know? It's got those like...
Yeah, that one's really good.
Oh, you know something I want to say about Royal Trucks in general? Is
what?
Like, they have the best guitar tones, you know?
Yes!
Like,
yes.
They have a great variety of tones on their albums, I think. And, like, they all sound really cool. And, like, they know how to kind of, like, mix up guitar tones, like, on one track to sort of produce contrasts and, like, uneasiness.
Yeah.
Well, of course, the one song that I think of for that was one we're not going to be talking about because it's Lose the Frequency from Veterans of Disorder. Where it's just that like massive 6-minute Neil Haggerty solo at the end with all those different guitar parts coming together. It like I love that song,
yeah.
But the album is not so much. So.
This album is also notable for having some collaboration with David Berman from Silver Jews.
Oh, from Silver Jews, yeah.
So.
Yeah, it seemed weird at first because like I only knew Silver Jews from American Water onward when I first heard this, and then I listened to some of their older stuff and it's like, oh yeah, Dave Berman was kind of fucked up in the same way that Neil Haggerty's fucked up. That makes a lot more sense now.
I've never actually listened to Silver Jews, so
they're not like they're very good at what they do, but if what they do isn't for you, then you probably won't get much out of it, sort of thing.
Well, it's kind of singer songwriter,
yeah,
kind of stuff, right?
But Starlight Walker, at least there's a lot more, like, there's more weirdness there, especially in the lyrics, so that one you might want to get a listen to. But
okay.
Other than that, like, they're, like, American Water and Night Flight and Tanglewood Numbers are just, they're very good singer-songwriter albums.
I mean, I like
there
songs
is no
if they're
very
good
singer-songwriter albums, except for The Stranger by Billy Joel.
Well, what about Neil Young?
Fuck, you got me.
That's right.
Hey, diss my countrymen, and you're going to get some.
We're saying Neil Young
no,
is great.
No, I'm not. I'm saying I love Neil Young.
Yeah. Neil Young is probably the greatest thing
Neil
Canada
Young's
has
producer,
given us.
Like Neil Young's producer was the guy who produced this album, too, so there's that to tie it back to.
Oh, yeah, that's right. I forgot all about that. David Briggs.
Yeah.
Oh, really? What Neil Young did he produce?
After the Gold Rush.
Yeah, most of his 70s stuff, I think.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did like On the Beach and Tonight's the Night. And Tonight's the Night is his best record, so.
Did he do Zuma as well? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah,
no,
he did.
I'm looking at it. Wow. Okay. He did most of Neil Young's most significant work.
Yeah.
You know what Neil Young album is underrated?
Trans?
Yes, but I was going to say something else.
What?
Reactor.
I haven't listened to that one.
Reactor is cool.
I haven't listened to any of his like 80s Fuck You Geffen albums.
Oh, you gotta. Hey, Reactor. No, Reactor is total trash rock. Like it's like really simple, like almost like jokey kind of like just
well,
dumb rock
it's
music.
It's probably just the impression that I got from when I was getting into Neil Young. It's after whatever the live album was in 79. It's like, you don't need to listen to anything until the 90s. It's like, okay, I'll just go along.
No,
that's
no.
Not at all true.
Trance is really good. Like,
They've undergone some sort of reevaluation since then, but this was like, you know, the dark ages when the only resource I really had was all music.
I mean, most of his 80s material is bad. I will agree with that, but Trance is definitely good, and Reactor, I think, is worth hearing, too. It gets short shift, but
you know what Neil Young album is really good
huh.
is Arc, which
is
where
the live album?
The what?
It's the that live noise thing he did at the same in the early 90s, right?
Yeah, well, it's like it's a bunch of stuff edited from Weld, the like double like convention live album that he released. I think the same year. It sounds like KG Hino.
Yeah. I also really like his Dead Man soundtrack. That's...
Yes, yes.
His Dead Man soundtrack is fucking amazing.
It is fantastic.
Dead Man is amazing.
It works so well with the movie.
I haven't seen that movie in way too long. I need to watch it again.
It's so good.
If you want to see Gibby Haynes getting a blowjob, it's in that movie. Yep.
And after all, who doesn't want to see that?
it's all I've ever wanted.
Right. Anything else about Thank You?
Have You Met Horror James is really good.
Yeah.
Their other collaboration with Dave Berman.
So did Dave Berman play on it?
I think he just wrote lyrics.
He helped write it? Okay. Interesting. I wonder how that happened.
Well, they were both on Drag City, so they probably knew each other through that.
It's probably got something to do with that, yeah.
Well, and given that like the guy who owned Drag City was Royal Trucks' manager, they probably had their fingers in a lot of stuff on that label too.
Probably.
Interesting. All right then. I reckon we can talk about Sweet 16, which is supposed to be the 70s album.
I think they get it here.
Decades. Yeah, I think this is my favorite of their decades, and that's weird because I generally don't like 70s rock much at all.
This to me is like their prog album, kind of. Like it's got a lot of like little parts to it in all the songs, and like a lot of psychedelic flourishes. What I was saying about the guitar tones, there's a lot of guitar tones on this album. Like it's the guitars sound amazing, I think.
Oh yeah, like the solo at the end of 10 Days, 12 Nights.
Yes,
that guitar sound is just like...
Point that out. And there's like a trumpet on there, and it's like... Yeah, that whole like outro.
Stems, that whole fanfare that they have going in that song, it just sounds amazing.
Yeah.
My favorite song on this album, one of my favorite Royal Truck songs, is Morphic Resident.
Oh, definitely.
Oh yeah.
Which absolutely sounds like Exile on Main Street. Like, they completely get it right.
Given that Haggerty was the one who convinced Pussy Galore to do that whole Exile on Main Street cover, that's like it's amazing that it took this long to get something that sounds so much like it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. But Morphic Resident is so great.
Yeah.
It's just like it's got real emotion and like pathos to it too. Which is great.
You'll Be Staying in Room 323 is another one that I can't get enough of that one either.
Yes, I love that little ambient interlude in the middle of it. It's beautiful.
Just weird to be saying about a Royal Trucks album, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't think that's weird. I think Edge of the Ape Oven is beautiful.
Yeah.
And it all depends on what your definition of beautiful is, I guess.
Sure.
Beauty is in the eye of the beholder. What have you been told your whole life?
So many things that I found to be bullshit, so.
Well, not that one.
No, not that one, but can't go by what they say all the time.
You know what's cool?
Cold joint. That one's yes. good.
You know what's cool about this album?
It has a really disgusting cover.
Yes.
Yeah, we probably should mention that.
It's disgusting.
Go ahead and take a look at the cover of this album if you haven't seen it before.
Yeah.
It is
apparently really... like apparently it's not what it not at all what it looks like. It's just
right. I read that Jennifer Hirayama said that it was based on like her 16th birthday, where she was just like on acid and alcohol.
Yeah, and she just threw like. I think it was like red pepper sauce and
yeah, and chili
as well, and just had her friend ice RTX on top of it all.
Yeah,
yeah. So I guess at this point they were trying to get off the major label that they had signed to already.
it seems like it was a complicated thing because the guy who had signed them to Virgin left shortly after they had been signed, and the people who they were. Who like their A&R reps after he left were basically trying to get them to do things that, you know, regular rock bands do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And they liked being on Virgin, but they didn't like that aspect of it.
Right. I think they liked the guy who they originally were going to be working with.
Yeah. Cause they had been in negotiations with Geffen before, right after Cats and Dogs. And then their manager basically said, no, this guy at Virgin is the guy you want to talk to. He's the real deal. So they went over there, and then that guy was fired, like, pretty much immediately. Like, I don't know if there was any sort of correlation causation between them, but just, like, that's how it happened, and then, but apparently their contract was amazing.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they pretty much had complete creative freedom, I think, for the three albums that they, and they had, like, promise from the studio to help them, like, fund their weird-ass decades idea also.
Yeah,
like in terms of like, providing the equipment and all that.
Yeah, and they managed when they convinced Virgin to let them out of the contract, they got enough out of that so they could build their own studio at a ranch out in Virginia.
Yeah.
And but like I was reading like some interviews that they did when they had the Drag City did the reissues of Accelerator and all that stuff. And apparently like what it was is that their contract was they were signed for two albums with an option for a third. And if the label declined the third album, they had to pay out so much. And if they accepted it, they had to pay so much. So basically, they kind of forced the label's hand into letting them go with a bunch of money to go make Accelerator. But like they got back from making Sweet 16 and were just like, okay, so we're going to go in and self-produce an 8-song album right away. And it's like, no, we're going to give you money.
That rules.
Yeah, they knew how to play the system. Yeah. Which is something that more bands that went into that position probably needed to learn.
Yeah. They did good for themselves. But I was going to say, you know what else is cool about this album?
What?
Rolling Stone gave it 1 star.
That is cool.
Work of quality right there.
Exactly. Like, is there any
greater
compliment?
If Rolling Stone gave an album 1 star, you should definitely listen to it.
Yeah.
It's the same sort of logic I use when I'm going through my Netflix goods. Whatever has the lowest user rating is the movie I'll go watch next. Steered me wrong so far.
Yeah, I mean, it was Rolling Stone giving They Were Wrong So We Drowned by Liars 1 star that made me think, I gotta check this shit out.
See, that's an album that I'm not a huge fan of, but
Oh, no.
Well, it's more tied up in that I wanted another. They threw us in a Trench and Stuck a Monument on top. I loved that album, and then I heard that and was like, "What the fuck is this?" but I mean, I love Drums Not Dead, and I understand like what it's like in their chronology. I understand what it's doing, but just the bitterness that I have from hearing it that first time just has not left me.
Oh, man, see, yeah, I hadn't heard the first.
It should, because that album's great.
You guys aren't the first people to tell me that. It's like I just can't bring myself to go back and listen to it, honestly.
You gotta.
It'll happen eventually.
It's so good.
Bury the hatchet with yourself, man.
I mean, I do remember loving Broken Witch and just but not being able to
of course
get with
you
that.
Did.
Yeah.
Of course you did, because it's great.
Yeah.
And I can't imagine you not liking the rest of the album if you go back and listen.
I probably would, but the thing is that I've got like this massive backlog of things that I've downloaded that I need to listen to first, sort of
yeah,
thing.
Yeah, sure, sure.
Yeah, I'm making excuses. Blah, blah, blah.
You know what I wonder?
And you can do your little "I was right" dance when it turns out that I give it 4 stars.
You know what I wonder about this album?
Hmm.
What was cleaning that toilet like?
I don't know, man.
Looks like it was rough. You can't flush all that.
Yeah.
Part of me just thinks that they found like some abandoned toilet and used it to build this like sort of sculpture and then just threw it out afterwards for someone else to find.
Where'd they throw it?
Toilets are
heavy.
Well, if you got a dolly, you can move one around pretty easily.
Who has a dolly?
Well, they're at a recording studio. There's got to be equipment there to move like heavy objects around.
He's got a point.
I guess. I'll allow it.
It's just a theory. I don't know what the fuck happened to the toilet.
What other songs on here are good?
I really like Microwave Maid.
What's that?
Microwave Maid.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
I like the title track, too. Sweet 16.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Don't Try Too Hard, the opener, I like a lot. Because I really like the keyboard parts on it, actually. Which, I guess there were synths on Twin Infinitives, but apart from that, like, not a lot of, like, keyboard sounds on Royal Trucks records up to this point.
Well, the ones on Twin Infinitives are really primitive.
Yeah.
And, yeah.
Like, really, like, the oldest fucking synths that they... this was
and
like,
they weren't trying to be keyboard parts.
Yeah.
No. Whereas this one, like, if they're trying to evoke the 70s, you gotta have the keyboards.
Sure. But I just love those, doot 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 sounds on "Don't Try Too Hard." Like they're sort of cute.
Yeah.
My one criticism of this album, because I think the songs are great, it is really long.
It's long for sure.
Yeah, other than Twin Infinitives, I think this is their longest.
Yeah, and the songs are.
And
complex.
Twin Infinitives is longer than this, but because that feels like such an immersive like journey, you don't feel it as much.
Yeah, I don't think Twin Infinitives feels like as long as it is.
It doesn't.
It really doesn't.
This one does, though.
Yeah.
Just because I think like the songs are complex. You know, they're kind of complicated and sort of difficult to.
I'm pretty sure that if you cut this down to like maybe a 40-minute album, it would probably go up a little bit in my estimation. But even as it stands right now, like I said, this is my favorite of the decade's albums.
Okay. Yeah.
I gotta say, my favorite of the decade's albums is the next album.
Gonna say that too.
I used to think that, and then Sweet 16 just grew on me. Whereas Accelerator, like, I don't know if it grew off me or if it just kind of stagnated.
Because
I think this was the first full Royal Trucks album that I listened to was Accelerator.
I believe it was mine too, actually. But you know. Leaving Twin Infinitives aside, just because it's such a singular album, I would say this is their best album, Accelerator. I think it just feels really focused, and all the songs are really memorable and have like fun riffs and like fun lyrics and vocals. And
this is a really fun album.
This
it's
is a fun album.
Length.
Yeah.
It's the even though
it might be my least favorite decades album, like it's either this or Thank You, but this is the one that I listen to the most just because it's so much fun.
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of a party album, actually.
Yeah,
like it definitely doesn't sound as drugged out as their other records. Like,
well, I don't think they were.
Yeah, there weren't drugs in the picture at this point,
right? So that makes sense.
Yeah.
But
I think my main beef with it is just like I like all the songs. I just think that the sound of the album is like I need to be in a certain mood to listen to it, sort of thing.
It
and
is
actually,
a very odd sounding record. Like,
well, yeah. I actually read into what they did, and apparently they looked at a bunch of like the spectrum analysis for pop songs from the 80s, and then looked at like where the peaks were, what the waveforms looked like, and then forced the songs they had written to fit those waveforms.
Interesting.
So
they've got like that weird compressed that weird like overly compressed sound to them.
Yeah.
And like, so, and that's how they were like, they figured they would evoke the 80s by just making their waveforms look like songs from the 80s,
see,
which I understand to some point, but like the results, they're singular, but it's not something that I can listen to all the time.
Yeah, because, you know, I had heard that this was supposed to be their 80s album, and to me it doesn't sound very 80s. Like, when I think of the 80s, I think, you know, big reverbed drums and, like, glossy sounding instruments and all that.
All the worst things. All the worst things.
Well, that's pop music of the time, anyway.
Yeah.
Throw some reverb on those drums. I don't give a shit.
But even, like, indie rock, you know, it had a sparse, kind of clean sound, I think, which this doesn't really sound like either. What it sounds like is, like, a poor quality MP3, kind of.
Yeah, it does.
Yes.
Like, it sounds like you're listening to, like, 96K MP3s, sort of. Which I kind of like, actually. Like, I think it's a cool-sounding album. And I think it accentuates the songs in a neat way. Like, I'm ready for
it. Definitely makes it more memorable. Like,
yeah, yeah. And, like, I'm ready, for instance, that riff, like, the way the sound quality, like, makes it crunch, kind of, is really cool sounding. Or something like Yellow Kid, which is this kind of bluesy acoustic guitar song, and it sounds really... like,
apparently,
like,
the original title for that was Black Quarterback, which
no, it was, and it was this like political song about I forget the exact
about racist bullshit, basically.
Yeah, like, I forget the exact point that they were trying to make, but it was like a political song about racism.
Well, it was based around the part, like, people in the sports community saying that black people aren't as good at quarterbacking because of, you know, reasons that are steeped in centuries of racial discrimination and all that shit.
Yeah, that's so, right, yeah.
I don't know exactly how that... I don't think that really comes across in the song that in Yellow Kid so much, but I can, I can see where the through line is there.
Yeah. Well, I think they toned it. They were like, this is too political and, like, dour, and they toned it down.
This is too heavy for our fun time 80s album. We've got to make it a little less serious.
Yeah.
Yeah, if it does tap into the spirit of the 80s, I would say that's the sense that it does. Like, that it is a fun album, and the 80s were kind of a sort of a glitzy, carefree, like, partying sort of decade. I mean, that wasn't like how life was, but that's sort of how the music was at the time, you know.
Well, and I mean, some of the lyrics are kind of, they're kind of steeped in the whole Reagan thing, like Follow the Winner especially. It's like just basically the entire 80s political mindsets in one song. Like, you follow the guy, follow the winner, you don't, doesn't matter what the fuck he's doing,
right?
I like that they have a tribute song for Steven Seagal.
Well, that's very 80s. So
I thought he had his heyday in the early 90s, didn't he?
Late 80s, early 90s.
I think he did a lot of his work in the 80s, too. Like,
especially, I think late 80s were when he was at his peak, and then in the 90s was when he descended into self-important mumbo-jumbo.
Right.
Like, have either of you ever seen Fire Down Below?
No.
No, I've seen On Deadly Ground.
Oh, no, that's the one I'm thinking of, On Deadly Ground. That's the, like, the apex of Steven Seagal at his worst.
Yeah. He had some shit to say about the environment.
He did, and he wanted everyone to hear it for 10 minutes.
Well, he was never, like, good, though, was he?
Steven Seagal? I think a lot of people love him as an action hero, definitely. Like, he's definitely considered one of the, like, great action movie stars, I think.
Yeah, like, it's him and Van Damme, I think, are the two that people actually have some any sort of nostalgic fondness for.
Yeah, and, like, Schwarzenegger, too.
Yeah, but Schwarzenegger, there was so much more that you could latch onto there. I mean, like, Van Damme and Seagal never made Total Recall.
That's true.
Yeah, like, I think Arnold Schwarzenegger kind of got lucky that he was surrounded by, like, movies that were better than he was.
Sure. I mean, The Terminator is a great movie.
Yeah.
I don't care what anyone says. But actually, you were right. Most of his work was early 90s. He did one movie in the 80s, Above the Law. But
no one's above the law.
That's true. Not even Steven Seagal.
No. Not even the president.
No. You can't karate kick your way out of everything.
Wouldn't that be awesome, though, if, like, on his last day of office, Obama just karate kicked the shit out of every single person, like, in Congress?
That would be cool.
He would that go was the greatest executive action I'd ever see in my lifetime.
But this is a really good batch of songs, though. Like, I don't think there are any... I think all of the songs on this album are memorable, which I don't know if I could say that about any other Royal Trucks album. Exactly.
They're definitely memorable, but like I said, just the sound of it I could get more into it when I was younger, I think, and then I got old and this stuff just kind of it hits my ear the wrong way and I'm just like, nope, can't do that today.
That's too bad, because that Liar, you know, reflects that sound a lot too, I think. Like, that guitar riff sounds very processed and compressed but I think it's cool like sounding.
For all the kind of shit that I'm throwing at, I mean, I love Banana Question. Yes. And that's like the dumbest, stupidest song that anyone has ever recorded, and I fucking love it. Like,
and yeah, just mindless and repetitive too, you know?
Yeah.
Which is a quality I admire in music.
Jennifer Hirayama has this whole thing about, like, bananas.
Her new band's Black Bananas, right?
Oh, yeah. Right, yeah. And, no, but I read an interview with her where she was saying, like, that she looks for the stuff that other people have thrown out and, like, cast off, and she relates that to bananas somehow. I guess because they go bad so quickly. Like, you can't fucking buy bananas because they go bad in a day. You have to eat them all like in 2 days. Well, I can't do that. I don't like bananas that much.
Well, that's why you buy them when they're slightly green, so you've got that bit more leeway on them. But,
yeah. I know, but then I forget.
True.
Then well, I don't want them anymore.
As someone who lives on their own and has no one to share bananas with, it is kind of a struggle. But
banana buying tips from our podcast could be your life.
Well, we got to do something for these people.
Get that sweet banana lobby money coming in.
Shakita is going to sponsor us.
Yeah. Well, banana's sordid history, like, in this country, like, how bananas really... I mean, why we have such ready access to bananas all the time. It was fucked up. You should look that up.
Yeah, pineapple, too.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure.
Any tropical fruit, really. That's, especially, like, given how easy it is to find up here in the fucking boonies at all times.
Pineapple is disgusting, though.
That's what you're wrong,
I'm saying
friend.
It here. Yeah,
I'm with Jeff on this one. Pineapples are...
Pineapple is probably the best fruit, honestly.
Ugh, God.
It's probably slightly colored by the fact that my old roommate was deathly allergic to them, so I could never have them while I was living there. Oh. And now that I can have them, it's just like, I was missing these so much.
They make my mouth, like, itchy.
Might be a little bit of an allergy, then.
Maybe. Well, I also just think they don't taste good, but...
Yeah, fair enough.
Well, that might be related to your allergy.
Maybe.
Because, you know, maybe it's hard to find something tasty when it makes your mouth itch.
It's interesting telling you should not eat things by making them seem disgusting to you.
Exactly.
I guess.
Because pineapples are objectively good. That's the thing.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
isn't that
sorry? I'm sorry. I'm defective.
I don't know what to tell you.
Well, it's all there's a whole bunch of things like that. Like, there's actually a gene for cilantro that makes it taste excessively like soap for like one in 10 people or something.
Huh. Yeah. Because I just think cilantro is too strong. Like, I don't mind it, but it's just a lot.
Well, you don't need much of it in a dish. It's a nice accent, but if it's the only thing you're tasting, then yeah, I can see it being a problem.
Yeah.
Oh well, yeah, if it tastes like soap.
No, it doesn't taste like soap to me. Like, I like the taste of it. I just, like, it's really easy to overdo it, I think.
Well, just use it sparingly.
Exactly. Yeah,
just be careful.
Be careful with your cilantro.
Yes.
Just be careful in general. Just be careful out there.
Public service announcement number two.
Yeah. Be careful out there.
Be careful out there.
Yep.
Speaking of the 80s.
Yeah. You know what other song rules on this album?
Juicy Juicy Juice.
Well, yes, but that isn't what I was going to say. Juicy Juicy Juice is awesome for how it ends, you know? Like, the way it just keeps building, like, noisy and getting chaotic, and that's really cool. But I was going to say New Bones, which I think is one of the best Royal Truck songs, actually. Like, just the atmosphere it creates through, like, layering all these guitars on top of each other, and it sounds, like, truly psychedelic in a way that I don't really hear from a lot of bands in the 90s. Like, it's like some way out acid trip music for sure.
Sure.
Yeah, that song rules. This whole album rules. Like, this is, you know, Twin Infinitives is very much its own special thing, but, like, this is, other than that, the best Royal Trucks album, I think. Like, it is consistent.
It might
every
be,
song is
yeah.
memorable. Like, it's just a
I'd probably give
the
edge to Sweet 16, but that's just because, like, it's grown on me. Mm. Like, there was a time where this probably would have, I might have even said this was better than Twin Infinitives before I finally, like, got that album.
Mm-hmm.
But I mean, like I said, it was the first one I heard, so it's got some sort of nostalgic value to me. I just can't listen to it very much anymore.
Fair enough. Do we have anything else to say about Accelerator?
No, not really. It's
a fun album that I wish I could listen to more than my ears will let me at this point.
Fair enough. Well, that takes us to the end of the albums that we planned on discussing. But do you want to say anything about the other Royal Truck stuff, Brent? Or maybe just give us a quick little run through?
Really, like, the only thing that I would want to talk about is the fact that I've probably heard Royal Trucks first because Inside Game was in High Fidelity. Have you've seen High Fidelity, right?
Yeah, I have, but I don't remember Royal.
Yeah, it's the kids that are doing the shoplifting at the store. The song that they make, that they have the release party for, is Inside Game.
Oh, that's Royal Trucks.
That's Royal Trucks.
I did not know that. This entire
Neither did I until I, because it was like an EP that they did, like either their last or second last release was this EP that had like that and a couple of other songs on it. And I had no clue it was a Royal Truck song until I came across that one. It's like, holy shit, I've known this song since High Fidelity came out. How the fuck did I not know that this was Royal Trucks?
Interesting.
I don't think that High Fidelity is that good.
I might agree. I haven't watched it in a while, but like, as far as music nerd movies, it gets a lot of shit wrong.
Right. I mean, like, it's sort of fun just to, like, have a movie about a music nerd. But, like, it is just sort of, like, a guy, like, being like, women, they all hate me because I'm an asshole. Like,
just stop being an asshole.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah, but, and then there's the things like the fucking Beta Band scene, where you have a magic CD player that takes you to the climax of the song.
Right.
Yeah, just hit play and start that fucking point. It's not how CDs work.
Yeah.
Really pisses
also,
me off.
Also, I just hate the way John Cusack looks.
I like Joan
Cusack. Maybe if she was a star of High Fidelity, I'd like it better.
She's in it.
The distaff version of High Fidelity with a bunch of female music nerds.
I would love that movie because you never see that. You never really get to see in movies like women that are really passionate about like a singular thing like
unless
that.
Unless that singular thing is a guy.
Yeah, exactly. And that's boring.
Because
I'm sorry to tell you guys, but men are really boring.
Well, you know.
Given that where I work, there are, I think, 5 men in the whole store out of a staff of 60, I get that opinion a lot.
We're not here to entertain you, Caroline.
Well, I thought everything on Earth is here for me to have an opinion on.
You're such a solipsist.
Yep. The world was created as soon as I was born.
The world is my playground.
Yeah. And I want nothing to do with any of it. If I could just stay at my house, I would.
I hear that. But in order to stay at my house, I need to make money to stay at my house. So I need to.
Yeah.
But okay, so that's your mentality, but men are boring?
Yep. I'm interesting.
All right, fair enough. All right.
Well, I do things that interest me. I watch movies. I play the bass guitar. I do this fucking podcast.
Brent, have you seen any good movies lately?
I finally got around to watching Burn After Reading a few nights ago and really enjoyed that.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I went to see that in theaters, and that is, I think, the one and only time I have gone to a movie theater drunk. And I don't.
What was that like?
I thought it would be a good idea for some reason, but like I kept nodding off during the movie, and I barely remember it to this day.
It's probably worth revisiting. It's a really fun movie, especially because like you've got like all these glamorous actors who are playing just complete fucking idiots.
Right. Did you see Hail Caesar?
Not yet. No, I don't think it actually came to the theater up here because, despite like the city I'm in, it's a population of about 75,000-80,000. We have one movie theater.
Oh man!
And so basically, it's dictated by what people in this people will go see. So there's like you know 3 screens for fucking Deadpool, but can't. But every unless something gets nominated for an Oscar, nothing interesting ever comes to the theater.
Right.
Yeah. And that's the only good thing about the Oscars.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and I guess they've kind of given some real estate to The Revenant just because the chick who plays Leo's wife in that movie was actually a student at one of the schools here.
Huh. Oh, cool.
Like some of my coworkers went to school either a couple of years ahead of her, I think, at the same school. So they've kind of, like, embraced that movie. But
so, Caroline, you saw Far From Heaven?
Yeah, I also rewatched Behind the Candelabra, which is the only Steven Soderbergh movie I've seen, but I can't imagine there being a better one because that movie is amazing.
You should really watch The Limey. That's my go-to Soderbergh movie.
Limey is good. Yeah. Yeah.
I can't imagine it's better than Behind the Candelabra because...
You'd probably like Schizopolis, Caroline.
Yeah, I probably would.
I still haven't seen Schizopolis. It's been, like, I've been looking for it for a long time, and I just cannot find it.
It's interesting. Like, it's such a strange movie, like, from Soderbergh, who, like... Soderbergh's an interesting director because he makes these extremely, like, commercial big-budget movies and just these weird little indie movies for, like, no budget. And it's cool. He's an interesting guy, I think.
I've got the first season of The Nick sitting next... My demons kind of remind me that I should probably watch that because I, you know,
the first season of the Knicks, the New York Knicks.
No, the Nick. It's this show Soderbergh did for Showtime a couple of years ago about Knickerbocker Hospital in the early 1900s in New York.
All right.
Yeah, and like everyone I've talked to said that it's amazing. So I picked up the DVD and I've just been waiting for proper time to you know set aside 10 hours to watch it. Sort of thing.
Well, let me ask you something. Does it have Liberace in full Liberace regalia going to a glory hole?
Given that it's in the early 1900s.
Because Behind the Candelabra does.
It's set in the early 1900s, so I don't think Liberace was even thought of at that point. So, point to you, I guess.
That sounds...
Have you not seen Behind the Candelabra, Jeff?
No, I haven't.
Oh my god, you have to see it.
I do.
It's
You're
fucking
right.
Amazing.
I've seen a bunch of Soderbergh at this point, but
have to see it. It's amazing.
I actually just watched Magic Mike like a week ago. So
how is that? I hear conflicting reports.
It's pretty good. Like it's kind of a standard, like you know, backstage entertainers like getting all fucked up and their lives are crazy, you know, like sort of movie.
Sure.
But you know, it's pretty good, and like the performances are good, and you know, if you're into like hot half naked guys, that's a plus.
I just remember that One time, my sister and her boyfriend were like flipping through Netflix trying to find something to watch, and she suggested Magic Mike and then described him the plot of it without mentioning that it was about male strippers.
That's pretty key.
What is the plot of it without male strippers?
Well, I think she described it as Channing Tatum is a guy who wants to get his custom furniture business off the ground.
Oh, yeah.
just completely hiding the fact that the way that he makes his money is by taking his clothes off.
That's true. That is Channing Tatum's goal in the movie, is he wants to start a custom furniture company.
That's a weird thing to want to do.
Well, he's pretty good at it, apparently. He has a passion for furniture. Like he,
well, somebody has.
When he goes into people's apartments, he's like, oh, what kind of table is this? It's weird.
Does he say that?
Yeah.
My gosh.
Maybe not those exact words, but like, yeah, basically that.
Well, that sounds like fun.
It is.
I've heard it's fairly good if you can get, if you don't mind, you know, the whole half-naked guys thing.
Sure. And I mean, for a lot of people, that's a plus.
Yeah.
Sure.
But I think we're just about done here, so do we have any final thoughts on Royal Trucks?
I think they have a really interesting career that you kind of, if you're interested in music, if you're interested in, like, the kind of music that we do on the show, you definitely should explore their career because they go to a lot of weird places that are really cool.
They're an underrated band. Definitely.
They really are.
I feel like they had a lot of hype in the 90s from, like, stuff that I've read and everything, and it doesn't seem like it's lasted, unfortunately.
Well, I think it's just that people are more resistant to things, like, especially if you think about, like, the three out, like, Cats and Dogs, Thank You, Sweet 16, that are so very much not, like, quote-unquote indie in their approach. Mm. People probably just kind of bristle at that being part of the 90s canon because, you know, it's got to be pure and... Sound 90s, man.
Yeah, well, that's stupid. Don't listen to those people.
No, but I mean, yeah, they definitely have one of the more interesting careers out of any band from that era, for sure.
A rich catalog.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So check it out if you like our podcast and the music that we do here. So.
All right. Well, I think we are done. Brent, thank you for coming on with us.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure.
It was a pleasure for us as well. You are welcome back if you would like in the future at some point.
I feel like in order to do that, I'd have to introduce you guys to some stuff because there are, like, the bands that I would want to talk about are not necessarily ones that you are familiar with.
But. Interesting.
That's okay.
Well, we'll see.
Yeah.
Yep.
All right. What's that?
Sure, we'll figure something out.
All right. But I think we are good to go. So next week, we haven't decided what we're doing.
That's good, because I thought I just forgot.
All that buildup for such an anticlimax at the end.
I was like in my car yesterday, and I was like, oh shit, I forgot what band we're doing next week. I don't know if we decided yet. So I'm glad that you...
We didn't
confirm that I didn't just forget.
I do want to say we're doing Animal Collective when the new album comes out. I know it leaked, but it's in poor quality. When it comes out, we're going to do Animal Collective. So keep on your toes for that, everybody.
I feel like that's highly anticipated.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it, actually.
Because yeah, I am too.
I need to revisit them. But until then... We will see you soon, podcast friends.
Yep.
Goodbye.
Bye, y'all.
See ya.